This episode of Country Squire Radio is brought to you by Missouri Meerschaum. We thank them for supporting this show, and we thank you for supporting them.
You're listening to Country Squire Radio.
Welcome to Country Squire Radio. I'm Bo.
And I'm John David.
JD!
Hey, Bo. Good afternoon, man.
Man, good afternoon to you too, sir. How are you doing today?
Man, I'm doing well. I'm doing well. It is it's a beautiful day. It's been a busy June, and going into July here, I guess, as this recording will air. And just insane times, but we're thankful, and things are going okay. My baby daughter took her first steps yesterday.
And hey.
First steps, and she even let's see, 2 weeks ago she said da-da, and then last week she said mama, and then this week she took her first step. So it's been a really precious really precious few weeks here, man. We're very thankful. It's a lot of good reason to spend time celebrating. So we're doing okay. Yeah. What's going on with you, man?
Man, that's a fun time. That just transported me back in time. Hearing that, man. Out of curiosity, we need to press in on this a little bit more. So first steps, was it to you? Was it to mama? Was it to like something dangerous?
It was actually kind of a little sad. So, we were really hoping we would get to, be there kind of when it happened, but actually it happened at daycare. And
yeah,
we're really disappointed, that we didn't get to see it. But what was so wonderful, and we just felt like it was such a blessing, as soon as we got home from work, my wife actually went and picked her up at daycare and got home, and then Charlotte immediately walked to her, like just automatically.
Yeah.
She was like, my wife was kind of upset about it and all that, and she was like, no, mama, I know you need to see this. We're going to do this right now.
And then
when I got home, she did the same thing. So it made me really happy. But just a really precious time, dude.
I firmly believe that like firstborn kids get such an advantage by going to daycare early on, because they get what younger kids get, which is to see other older kids doing the things that they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, with my second child is so much more like, she advanced quicker than my first child did at certain stages. And I guarantee it's because she's watching her, watching her big sister, seeing it go down. So I feel like there's the daycare gives that significant advantage, but I feel your pain. When my oldest took her first steps, it was at the Mississippi Children's Museum with my wife.
Yeah.
And I heard about it. I was like, I really wanted to be there for that. Why didn't I go? And then she came home and she walked straight to me. So, yeah,
you were like at home, man. Like, either taking a nap or, drinking Pinot Grigio in your bathtub or something. And you're
come on, man. No. Come on. No, look, that's a proud pipe moment. That's a proud dad pipe moment right there.
It's really special.
Good deal, man. Yeah, man, everything's been going good. We've, obviously we just had a very eventful week, not necessarily in Houston, although, things in Houston continue to be terrible. We won't talk about that right now.
But things worldwide continue to be
that's
eventful.
True. that's very, very true.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, there's, at least in the midst of the chaos, we've got some good news back home in Mississippi, man. And it's interesting. I think we have to address this because I feel like I may have created some concern on Twitter from a tweet that I posted.
I think you did. Yeah, a little bit.
All right. So I want to kind of like, I'll pull back from that, give a little bit of context. We won't spend too much time on this because, we got a lot of pipe related stuff to dive into here.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, this last past weekend in back home in Mississippi, where John David is holding it down and holding court, the Mississippi legislature, after what has been essentially a 20-plus year process, finally took the move to remove our state flag. Our state flag, and I say our, I'm going to continue to say our because I'm still Mississippi by blood.
Yeah,
exactly. They made the move to take down what was our state flag. It's the last flag in the United States to still fly a Confederate battle flag on it. It has been a, for people outside of Mississippi, it's hard to really explain just the depth of emotion from various levels of emotion that have gone into this move. And so It's you know, John David and I think he doesn't mind. I don't think you don't mind me saying this. I mean, this we are very much in the affirmative that this is a move that needed to happen.
Yeah.
And have been very supportive of changing the flag. And I think we're all very excited for that move and for what that could, you know, setting up a new banner that can really represent and be a kind of a rallying symbol for all Mississippians. However, you know, while I lived in Mississippi, and this is just me personally, I believe that there are certain things that we need to commit, you know, our time, our talent, and do our part in when it comes to addressing things that mean a lot to us. And so for me, one of the things that I really felt like needed to be changed while I was in Mississippi, there's a lot that needs to be changed in Mississippi, but one of the things that needed to be changed in Mississippi was that flag. And the only tools I had available was podcasting. And so several years back, y'all may recall, longtime listeners may remember this, I had a podcast series called Red Flag. And it was a mini series that we produced. And it's probably, if I could be so bold, probably one of the best polished produced podcasts I've ever made, with no disrespect to Country Squire. But I mean, like, it's scripted. We had like documentary style, like, you know, news clippings and
yeah,
just that
yeah,
top shelf, you know, podcast quality. Very, very proud of that series. And it was about, you know, the history of the flag, how the symbols came to be, how sure, the symbols have been used, what it's meant for a lot of different people across not just the state, but also the country. I'm very proud of that series. And so as we were getting to the point this past weekend where the decision was being made to change the flag, I tweeted out, man, I have never been more ready to retire a podcast.
And that's all you said.
Well, no, I mean, if anybody was following my Twitter, they should have really captured everything, because I mean, I was saying quite a lot as I was watching the Mississippi legislative debate. But that's the one that I think that a lot of folks, especially outside of Mississippi, who weren't quite aware of what was going on at the time, just latched onto that one, being like, wait, what? And so, yeah, no, I was just referring to the fact that, you know, Red Flag, we are actually recording a kind of an epilogue finale for that series that'll be going out this week and next week. So
yeah,
if you're interested, redflagpod.com is the place to do it, to check that out. And yeah, and then we'll be officially done with the podcast. It'll probably live for at least another year, maybe longer, just because, again, I'm very proud of the quality that produced.
Well, Bo, you put a lot of hard work into it. And again, we're pipe smokers. This is a pipe smoking podcast. We promise we're almost done. But you know, one thing about our show is, you know, we have made a point to bring ourselves and our own experience to the table here, and I think that's been in some ways valuable to the Country Squire Radio community. And this has been something that has been very significant in the lives of us. Bo and I both grew up here in the state. Bo was born here. I came here as a very young child. And, particular flag was, over us in school and, at the park and at the ballpark and, wherever we were. And it's something we've always known. And, later in life, I have kind of, though I understand, various sides and all that, have thought that, it'd be probably wise to take the move and proud that our state decided to pull the trigger and do what it did. And it was very emotional. You know, we live in a part of the world, though, where there are a lot of ghosts. You know, just down the street in my neighborhood there is literally on my street, like I could hit it with a pitching wedge from my front yard. You know, there is a memorial to where, the Confederates were holding the line at the Battle of Jackson, at the northern part of the line. Two blocks away from my house is a street called Fortification Street, and that's because that street served as the northern fortification defense for the city. And a few blocks over here to the east, there's actually a skirmish that took place, and there's a big memorial on the corner of Graymont and Poplar of the charge of the 2nd Michigan Brigade over there, where these Michiganders far away from home were getting together to defend themselves from kind of a Confederate counterattack. And this all happened in our neighborhood, so it's we live amongst this stuff, and it is hard to explain to a lot of folks that it just didn't grow up in this environment. And so and Mississippi has become such a diverse state, and we're very proud of that. And it was a very pivotal weekend. And so we're a lot of emotions, but thankful for the future. So really, really glad about that.
Yeah, and so again, I do apologize if I concerned anybody. Country Squire Radio is not going anywhere. That was not the podcast I was referring to. Interesting that some of y'all thought that was the case, though. it's like what? How should I interpret that if you see this immediately think that Country Squire Radio is going away? That's interesting.
I know, right?
But anyway, all right. Well, hey man, we've got a great show to dive into today, but we got a few more housekeeping items to get to. First of all, shout out to our good friend Brian Levine over at Pipes Magazine. As I understand it, he had a whole bunch of experts on his show, including you for some reason. What was that all about?
Man, I know, right? I joked with Brian on the air, you know, you can tell he's really getting desperate when he, reaches out to his little redneck friend down here to come on his show. But man, it was really, really awesome. Yeah, Brian had his 7 Questions for 7 Experts series, and man, just a really great time. He didn't let any of the panelists know kind of who was going to be participating on the front end. So we all asked the questions, not really knowing who else would be providing their opinion. But several doctors of pipes involved. I think I was the youngest by a mile. it was just really, really special. So anyway, check that out, Brian. Of course, with Pipes Magazine radio show, does a great job, him and Kevin Godby over there, and just love what they do. Obviously, over the years, have been very thankful for them, but appreciate Brian for having me on and talking about some, pipe opinion stuff, some pipe mechanics, and, I don't know, 7 questions for 7 experts. It was good. I was very honored to be there, so check it out if you get a chance.
Yeah, man. We also have some brand new club members who are joining the Country Squire Radio International Pipe Club. Joining us, ladies and gentlemen, at the Squire level, Stephen LeBlanc.
Yeah, man. If I'm correct in this, Stephen actually is a dear friend of mine. If it's a Stephen, I think it is. we have a Stephen that was a dear friend of mine in high school here that I'm just now starting to reconnect with. Just picked up the pipe recently. Yesterday bought a Bing's favorite at the shop, and man, it is getting into the podcast. I'm really thankful. So Stephen, thanks for hopping on board, man.
Man, also at the Pilgrim level, we've got Jason Wamsley.
Yeah, Jason, thanks so much, man. Hopping in at the Pilgrim level, that's great.
I kind of feel like I'm butchering of names. I'm saying them correctly, and it just makes me sad.
It doesn't even make sense. It just doesn't seem right, you know?
No, it really doesn't. It really doesn't. I have failed you, Jason and Stephen. I will do my best. Mr. LeBlanc and Wamsley. Wamsley. There we go. Well, man, I am excited for this particular week's episode because we are doing a tobacco talk. Now, for those not familiar, Tobacco Talks is kind of the meat and potatoes of what you would imagine a pipe tobacco podcast to be about. It's where we have one of the most experienced, one of the most trained palates in the pipe world to go through and review various pipe tobaccos. Now, historically, we have done things looking at loose blends versus tins, typically one or the other, or rather one and the other for each episode. But today we're actually doing a series. And let me tell you, something about this is almost heavenly. I'd almost say that, except that somewhat sounds heretical, all things considered, because we're going to be going into the God series from Savinelli, Cornell and Dill, 3-10 blends here, man. I'm so stoked for this.
Yeah, it's kind of neat they came out with this, and for me, to be honest, when it popped up here a couple months ago, it was quite a surprise. It was something that was I didn't really know Savinelli was working on, that this was something that was being cooked up, and they announced it and shipped them to the store for us to try, and it was a really pleasant surprise, man. They made some delicious blends and pretty interesting blends that we're going to talk about, and I thought this tobacco talk would be a good opportunity to talk about all 3 blends. They came out with 3 different tin tobaccos, and we thought we'd mention those. So you mentioned it a second ago. These are blended and produced by Cornell and Deal, and they're marketed under the Savinelli name. And it's interesting because there is a natural partnership here, right? I mean, Laudisi, which we've talked about before. If you're a pipe smoker and haven't heard that name, Laudisi is a company that owns a bunch of different pipe-related brands. One of the brands they own is Cornell and Deal. Another brand that they own is smokingpipes.com and several other things. They also are the American distributor for the Savinelli brand and actually just bought Peterson as well as of last year. So, it's kind of a natural pairing because you've got the folks that own Cornell and Deal, and they're kind of quarterbacking the Savinelli, market in the United States. And so, what better company to kind of get together and put their heads together to come out with some delicious tobaccos. And that's what they've done. So, it's pretty cool. They came out with three, it is their God series. It's, some handsome tins. There's the Janus, the Juno, and the Jupiter. We'll talk briefly about each one of these, but looking at it, Bo, you'd kind of mentioned when you first pulled these up, you're kind of impressed with the artwork, huh?
Look, that's one of the things that whenever we talk about any tin of tobacco, we just did it this last week. So much of the discussion on our Top Shelf Blends that I was able to contribute was a critique of the way in which they present themselves, because I believe that's a really critical component to the overall experience, not necessarily the smoking experience, of course, but in terms of, making the purchase, going in, figuring out what you're going to want. I think that you need to be able to tell a narrative with your product today for today's consumer. And man, yeah, when I was scrolling down, you sent me a link to actually just kind of a list of Savinelli blends. And, let's be honest, like Savinelli, they've got some beautiful tins. They've got some, shall we say, minimalist approach to the way that they present their tins. And so as I kind of opened it up, I was like, okay, huh, what a missed opportunity. As I was kind of scrolling through and seeing, like, for example, and again, this is not a critique of any of these blends or tins, but, their Black Cavendish or their English mixture, very basic, like, here's the color red, here's the color green, Cavendish, here's the color gold. but then I scroll down and I get to the God series and I'm like, oh my goodness, these are gorgeous. They know exactly what they're doing here. They're telling a narrative. They're building kind of a sub brand within a sub brand, to be honest. But it's these are some gorgeous tins. You almost kind of feel like you're ready to put these in your pocket and go to the market in ancient Rome, because you got the coins and the deities right here to get you through the gates.
Yeah. It is. They are evocative of coins, aren't they? And it's interesting because, these are made by Cornell and Deal, but they are the European style, coin tin, vacuum sealed tin. They're, the flat tin, which, when you think of Cornell and Deal, you always think of the, we laugh and refer to it as the little biscuit can kind of thing. But, so it's just something a little different that they're doing. But the Savinelli tobaccos traditionally have had this style of packaging, and so they went with that here. And, it's just really attractive how they came out with these. And, of course, you have the name of the god on the front, and then a photo of, some carving, some relief that they found somewhere of these particular gods. And so, pretty cool. These are, it's a series of tobaccos that are, for the most part, non-aromatic, with one major exception we'll get to. But for the most part, these are non-aromatic tins. All three are flake tobaccos, which is really interesting that they decided to go in that direction. I don't know if they anticipate bringing more tobaccos to the market under this kind of line that they've developed, or something else. But they've decided, at least with these first three, to make these flake tobaccos. And so just really impressive tobaccos, I thought, and worth trying. So. Diving in, I thought we'd just kind of go in the order I mentioned earlier. The first one we'll talk about is the Janus tobacco, and it's
appropriate that we begin things with Janus, isn't it?
with Janus, that's right. Janus, Roman god of time, beginnings, endings, duality, and transition. Mm. It's a Janus was a two-faced god, a god that, pivoted towards the past and the future. There's actually no, we always think of, Roman and Greek mythology having kind of an equivalency, but there's actually no Greek equivalent for the Janus god. This was something
you
that
say
Romans
that,
thought of as,
but at the same time,
as their own.
Perhaps Janus was his own equivalent. Huh?
I, Well, about that, you just go ahead and think that, Bo. That's fantastic. So, you know, you've got this this beautiful tin that features this two-faced god on the front, and it says Janus Antique Virginia. Now, the word antique here, I you know, you'll have to just ask the folks at Savinelli what that means, to be honest with you. I really don't, it's the first I've really heard that used in a, you know, in a description of a pipe tobacco. So, you know, they say antique Virginia, maybe it's got some extra aged leaf in there. Maybe, you know, it's from a specific crop that has a certain heritage or something. I really don't know, to be honest with you. I don't know what the name antique there means. But this is a Virginia. This particular blend is a Virginia Perique with some Orientals, and it's a wonderful blend. Really, really good. The description is an ambrosial mixture of bright Virginias, Orientals, and Perique, fascinatingly nuanced and exotic. And ambrosial, you know, it's talking about something exquisite, but also something that's worthy of the gods, you know, something that, you know, has a just that kind of quality caliber that you would present it as an offering type thing. So, yeah, really, really beautiful. Of course, you open the tin, and it's got the little Elizabethan collar paper in there, which, you know, is just a nice touch always. And then you have this beautiful flake tobacco. It's a broken flake. It's, you know, in the traditional style that you see from, you know, Cornell and Deal, where they take the, instead of full square flakes, they kind of break them into two or three pieces and then line them up in little chunks. And just very, very visually pleasing in the tin. And as soon as you open the tin, you know you're dealing with something that has a you know, heavy Virginia content. Nice vinegar room note to it. It's something that you know, it's sweet. It's musty. The Orientals really shine here. You're looking at it, and it definitely has a bright leaf component that you can tell has been you know, kind of modeled a little bit through the pressing process and slicing, and so it's just kind of a nice warm walnut color tobacco, really, really pretty, and the flakes just have a really nice moisture content too. I was really impressed with you know, with how these came out. So surprisingly, a naturally sweet blend, and again, floral is something that, you know, I think we're getting from those notes of Oriental leaf that's there. And then the Perique, although it's not overpowering, is certainly present. It gives a nice kind of stewed fruit plumminess there that that I think was really, really nice. So there is a little bit of pepper on the tobacco. It's more of a, you know, kind of a spiciness, I think, that lingers on the on the middle of your tongue. But a little white pepper, and then what this tobacco does, I think, is it accomplishes something really nice. It's a medium-bodied tobacco that's very complex. A lot of tobaccos, it seems like, to get to that complexity, you just almost have to, you know, go, you know, throw the Hail Mary and put all the over-the-top flavors in there and that kind of thing. But I think what they've accomplished here with this particular tobacco is a very complex tobacco in a medium-bodied, you know, form. And so it just really has a nice all-day, everyday smoke. It pushes a lot of buttons, sweet, floral, a little oaky and musty, the kind of you know, the terms that you would associate with an Oriental leaf, but, you know, having that nice complexity of sweetness and spiciness there, just enough citrus to make it interesting. It's a really good tobacco. So, you know, that's the Janus blend, and man, tasty tobacco, and I think you ought to try it.
Man, that's a good one. It's an interesting. I was kind of curious. Why do you think? Because, I mean, the other two are a little bit more obvious in terms of the naming convention, but why do you think they actually went with Janus on this one?
I don't know, to be honest with you. And, you know, it's I was wondering that. I don't know why they called it the Antique Virginia. I don't know why they, you know, picked these specific gods for these specific tobaccos. You know, it's something that remains to be seen. But yeah, certainly a great blend.
Interesting. That's I'd love to learn more there. That's fascinating. But all right, well, good deal. I just want to go back to something you said before we move on to the next one.
Yeah.
When going through the, you said white pepper.
Yeah.
So So your palate is so attuned.
Help me with this, huh?
I know what white pepper is. I'm just yeah. like blown away that your palate is so attuned that it's not a peppery, but a white pepper.
Having done this for years now, you know, you kind of start to notice these little nuances of, this kind of pepper, you know, leaves your tongue and senses feeling this way, and this kind of pepper evokes a different, you know, response from, your nose or your physiology or whatever. Maybe it makes your tongue water more, or your mouth water more, or makes your nose sting just a little extra. And so, I don't know. These are things that you just kind of pick up over time, and it's kind of my own experience, but your mileage may vary.
So. Okay, all right. I thought that was very specific. And I just wanted to acknowledge. Yeah. I didn't want anybody to miss that.
Yeah, no, that's good.
Please
that's
continue. Good. Yeah,
man. Moving along to the Savinelli Juno. It says Royal Virginia on it, and it has a picture of the goddess Juno, the Roman goddess, the protector of the empire, wife of Jupiter. Greek equivalent is Hera, but she is the patron goddess of the Roman Empire, and obviously the queen of the gods. So, with someone's name on this blend that would be that significant, you would expect it to be, a very thoughtful blend, something that, has a lot of energy put into it, and of course it is. Royal Virginia, again, you'd have to ask the folks at Cornell Deal kind of what their thinking is on that particular verbiage, but this is a Virginia blend. It's described as a delicate amalgam of stoved and unstoved Virginias, the pinnacle of leaves both red and bright. And so, basically what they've done here is they've taken mature Virginia leaves and then stoved some of the brighter leaf, and then added some more red Virginias there to make this a mixture of red and stoved Virginias. And so it's just a very nice warm blend. You think of these blends that feature red and stoved Virginias as being real rich and having a nice woody, oaky flavor that is very deep, lots of natural mellowness there that has a kind of a bready form to it. This tobacco surprised me with its complexity and the natural sweetness that's there. It is rich and velvety, but it has probably more sweet, kind of citrusy notes to it than I thought a blend like this would have. That, a blend that features these types of, ruddy leaves typically, in my mind doesn't have as much of that kind of citrus note to it. But this is really kind of, features that nicely. It doesn't have quite the breadiness, the thick mouthfeel or the deep, rich, apple cider vinegarness of some of the red Virginias that are out there. It's higher acidity than I would think of as be associated with this type of dark leaf, but incredibly flavorful. You open the tin, same kind of thing. It's got that Elizabethan collar in there and the nice kind of broken flake that comes out in little chunks, and just very, very attractive to look at. This tin tobacco is a little, probably a little redder, a little richer colored than the Janus that we mentioned. Similar, tin note to it. It has some of the mustiness that's there, kind of lingering in the background, but on the front end, it's more of that kind of bready, naturally sweet flavor that, has elements of grass and hay, just enough kind of silage flavor, something that you'd think of that, if a barnyard smell could be pleasant, that's kind of what you're thinking of here. So really good, burns to a nice ash, and, just very, very attractive, something that I think is not quite as, sophisticated or complex probably as the Janus, but very good tobacco in itself, and certainly worth the price.
You mentioned the you know, hay grass type of feel. I mean, it does, it kind of evokes a little bit of that wheat harvesty. Yeah. Although I guess the goddess of the harvest wasn't actually Juno, was it?
I don't know.
I was going to say maybe there might be some ties there, yeah. But no, now that I'm thinking about that, that doesn't actually make sense. But I do get that, you know, with, if you're kind of, you know, beginning this kind of brand, you would want to go with Juno and Jupiter as kind of the king and queen of the gods and kind of going in that route. I almost wonder if the idea here is that this one's a little bit more lighter, whereas Jupiter might be a little bit more intense in terms of the kick, so to speak.
Yeah, and so that brings us to the final, which is Jupiter in the series. And man, you're right. Jupiter is not just a bolder tobacco, but it's also very interesting. This is a tobacco that when I opened the tin, it certainly caught me off guard. Of course, you have you know, on the front Jupiter, it says Antique Burley, and on the back it says a commanding blend of Burley, Dark Fire Kentucky, and Virginias. Archetypally cased and pressed into cakes. It's also described as having a delicate topping of dark rum and molasses for a sweet, nutty, and complex flavor profile. So there's a lot going on with this tobacco. You can tell, you know, when they blended this, they were going for something, certainly with the Dark Fire Kentucky, you know, content there, something that's more, you know, robust, you know, strong, something that's gonna, you know, let you know that you're smoking a real full-bodied tobacco there. And certainly when you open the tin, you were met with the tin note that that lets you know that, you know, you probably should have eaten something before you smoked this. It's a very pleasant to look at tobacco. You're looking when you open this again at the you know, tobacco leaves that have been pressed into cakes and then sliced into these little broken flakes. But the look of the tobacco, this is a decidedly more red brown tobacco, where the other ones maybe are more on the walnut side. This is more of a lighter brown, kind of chestnut color. It's just very, very, very pretty, very pretty. But when you put your nose to this particular tin, you know, we talked earlier about, you know, living in Mississippi, living in the South, and, you know, chewing tobacco, of course, is very popular here. And when I opened this tin and stuck my nose in there, I immediately thought of Levi Garrett chewing tobacco. Like it tastes, I mean, it smells just like it, man. It's really interesting. It's got a the casing that's put on there. You realize almost immediately that this is it's a strong tobacco. It's got those you know, heavy burleys, but that molasses that's there, that kind of sweet nutty molasses you know, flavor, that it just, I don't know, it really made me immediately, it almost transported me to like a time and a place. It was one of those things that was very, very powerful. So when you smell this tobacco, you're not going to get the, you know, the tart, citrusy, grass and hay-like flavors that you will from the Juno and the Janus. You know, from the tin note of this particular leaf, you're going to get those, kind of oily, you know, toasty flavors that, you know, evoke strength, really. Just, you know, the Dark Fire Kentucky makes itself very, very apparent. You know, immediately, even from the tin note, that this is just probably going to be a pretty strong tobacco. And, you know, and I think lives up to that. It's very complex and very good. Commanding blend of Burley, Dark Fire Kentucky, and Virginias. Again, pressed into cakes and then sliced. You know, it's an interesting tobacco. It has a real healthy dose of that Dark Fire Kentucky. The Burley, of course, gives it, you know, plenty of body, a really nice thick mouthfeel. And there is that nice kind of, you know, thick smoke breadiness to it. The nicotine content is pretty high here. You know, and of course we can attribute that to the, you know, the Burley and the Dark Fire content there, but, man, really tasty. It's, you know, it's an aromatic tobacco. It is, it's certainly been flavored, but, But it's one that's quite strong, and of course the flake tobaccos will, you know, certainly appeal to the more sophisticated pipe smoker, which I think is always a lot of fun. Anytime you can find these points, these little inflection points where you make a tobacco that, you know, appeals to, it's an aromatic, but it appeals to non-aero smokers, or it's a non-aromatic that appeals to the aromatic smoker. I love that. I think so much of the fun of the pipe community and the pipe smoking journey is kind of found in those little pivot points. So this kind of accomplishes that. I think it is a strong tobacco. It's something that you know, I think would you know, do you well to you know, have a glass of water with, and you know, maybe after a big lunch or something of that nature. But the sweetness here is really really pleasant, and you know, not overwhelming. So I really enjoyed it, and you may have to let this one dry out a little bit more, but it is a really pretty flake, and something worth looking into.
Let me ask you this. Do you get the strong urge when smoking this pipe tobacco to transform into various creatures and have affairs that end up winding you in all kinds of trouble for throughout the eons? Is that a side effect, out of curiosity, of this particular blend? To be fair, I don't actually know Roman. I'm going based off more of the Greek interpretation of you know, quote unquote Jupiter here, but yeah.
I'm trying to think of like a witty way to respond that will also not get me in trouble. You know what I mean?
It's impossible. No, it's true though. If you look at like the Roman gods, and I mean, again, I'm more of like a more knowledgeable on kind of the Greek interpretations, but I know that there's similarities here, and it's really fascinating. Yeah. If you look at kind of you know, Greek religion and Roman religion, and the way that the you know, the pantheon of gods were established, it's so political. Like, it's so much tied to the politics of the day. As people were becoming part of Rome or becoming part of Greece, like, they were like, oh wait, what's your god? Your god's this? Well, actually, now your god is technically the god of this, and actually he's the extramarital son of our god. So Jupiter, like, it's fascinating. But Jupiter or Zeus, you know, depending on your you know, Roman or Greek, was typically ended up having all of these extra kids because they were incorporating all these new territories and all these new, you know, deities, like these kind of small time, you know, regional deities that they needed to incorporate into one massive religion to kind of affirm the political state. So it's fascinating stuff. I know it has nothing to do with pipe tobacco, but given the fact that they went here, I have to make note of that.
With each and every mason jar that you conquer with your tobacco cellar, and as that goes forth and the tobaccos blend and you know, conquer new and different and exciting pipes, then your own pantheon grows. And so we look forward to seeing what else Savinelli and Cornell Deal cook up here. But a fun trilogy, really, really a fun series. And I was pleasantly surprised. It was one of those things that kind of snuck up on us. Didn't really have a lot of foreknowledge that this was coming down, through the system. But once it hit, we were, you know, proud to get it and have really enjoyed it.
Man, I'll give this a whole nother spin too. And hey, if you get a little nervous when kind of referring to, false gods or idols or something of that, remember, this is your way of burning the heathen gods. That's what you're doing. So from that standpoint, you also have that opportunity there too.
That's right. Set them on fire to your own pleasure.
Exactly.
Right.
Just like the Vatican of old. That's what you got to do, man. You got to take all the heathen gods and smelt them all down. Well, hey, man, this is great. And of course, anytime that you're trying out some new pipe tobaccos, if you want to identify that white peppery a tinge that's in every single flavor of the various pipe tobacco. No, that is true. That is 100% true. But I tell you what, man, it would help me to get a little bit closer to you by expanding my palate with a great pipe from our good friends at Missouri Meerschaum.
Man, that is right. That is right. We've got a really special treat to feature today from Missouri Meerschaum. Of course, we are closing in on
the God Slayer. Oh, sorry.
I know that they should think about that. Maybe you and Phil could collaborate on that particular pipe.
Ooh,
but,
we do like
that. Man, we are getting close to Independence Day. July 4th, of course, is this as we record, is this coming weekend, and Yeah, man, they came out with a beautiful Independence Day set 2020. Retails for only $21.99. And to celebrate America's Independence Day, they've put together this really nice corncob pipe and leather pipe stand combo set. It features a cherry-stained and varnished natural Great Dane spindle corncob pipe featured with a straight filtered amber Danish bit paired with a Missouri Meerschaum leather pipe stand in your choice of either tan or brown. It's a really beautiful combination, and you know, that Great Dane pipe, I think, just really speaks to you know, the American you know, just image. It really it's a very American, a very Missouri Meerschaum pipe, and so you know, something that's incredibly attractive and goes really well with this beautiful little leather stand that that comes with the set. So only $21.99. The limit quantities are limited. They are first come, first served, but they are available as we record at corncobpipe.com. You can go there, check it out, get the pipe and the stand, both in tan or in a darker brown, straight from the source. They'll ship it right to your door. And man, we just really appreciate Missouri Meerschaum for sponsoring the show and coming out with these awesome kits.
Pipe question of the week.
Pipe question of the week. That's right, it's pipe question of the week, where we take a question of yours and send it to John David for an answer. That's what I don't know that I've ever defined pipe question of the week. It's got them all in the name, but there you go. All right, I love this, man. Yo, it's your boy Commodore. One of the estate pipes I keep in my car and briefcase recently had some trauma. This thing made like a... Oh my gosh, Commodore.
Wow.
This thing made like my parents' end split. Right at the base of my stem anyways. It has a thread insert to fasten the pipe. Last week I realized that along the insert was a giant split. Though it looks uglier than a Kirby vacuum bag from the 80s, it still smokes great. So what could have caused this? Heat, rapid temperature change, alcohol from cleaning? I appreciate your help, boys. Stay firm, Commander Perry. Our Commodore, rather, Perry. And Commodore actually sent along, I should mention, he sent along some pictures to go along with this question.
Yeah, yeah. Commodore, it's always great to hear from you, brother. Of course, longtime friend and listener of the show. And if you don't know Commodore Perry or not friends with him, you're missing out. He's a wonderful guy, man of many talents. But so he's got this pipe here, and it does have a threaded tenon that kind of sticks into the stem of the pipe. The pipe stem appears to be, I'm guessing it's vulcanite. It's a rubbery looking material. It doesn't look like it's acrylic or lucite. But what's probably happened here, Commodore, is that you know, when this particular piece got hot, and maybe the tenon there was screwed in perhaps a little too tightly, that expanded and then the material burst. I've never seen anything quite happen like this before. Generally, you know, that when you see a crack in the stem of this nature, there's a chip or it splits, you find kind of a cutout or a bite mark or something. But this is almost like a fissure that's kind of developed in there. It's hard to explain without seeing the photos for our listeners. But my guess is that this was more heat related. And it's just one of those things that, you know, you're going to have to put up with unless you feel like getting a new stem cut for this particular pipe. It sounds like, according to your notes here, that it actually is still smoking okay, which, you know, to be honest with you, is kind of amazing considering, you know, just the look of this particular pipe. Let's see. Though it looks uglier than a Kirby vacuum bag from the 80s, it still smokes great. And, I just think it's, if you can, just limp along with it and continue to smoke it, I think it's, it's a beautiful pipe, certainly something that, it looks pretty, has a nice shape, kind of a horn shape or perhaps a Zulu. But with that threaded tenon like that and then it getting particularly hot, my guess would be next to that kind of metal screw-in insert that is on the stem portion of it, you probably experienced some temperature related stuff there. So other than that, not sure, but man, if it works, keep smoking it. And of course, we can always recommend some really good pipe artisans, stem repair people that can get you fixed up with a new stem if you ever need one.
That's a great question, Commodore. I know I've made this reference before, but every single time I see his name, I think of Commodore Schmidlap from the 66 Batman movie. Just can't help it. But man, I love you. Thank you so much for sending that in.
Yeah, man. Always good to hear from you.
100%, man. If you've got a pipe question for us, be sure to send it in. show@countrysquireradio.com.
Quick note here too, Bo. I find myself often, I'm trying to remind newer pipe smokers more often. I kind of have gotten away from this just because you get into a rhythm of, you know, when you're talking to pipe smokers, you think they have all the answers like you do, or not that I have all the answers, because I certainly don't, right. But you just kind of start assuming that people know, you know, maybe more than they do. And I've been trying to make a conscious effort to remind pipe smokers, man, just you know, don't leave your pipes, you know, out in the heat. Don't leave them in your vehicle, you know, outside. And, you know, if you make a habit of leaving your pipes, you know, outside, if you live in a particularly hot, a particularly humid environment, somewhere that the temperature changes regularly, you know, that's pretty tough on a pipe. You really want to, you know, keep your pipes in a, you know, room temperature environment that's pretty stable, pretty constant. And your pipe, you know, all the materials in your pipe and the moisture in the wood and all that kind of stuff. I mean, that it's just going to be a happier pipe if you let it live in that environment permanently. So just, you know, trying to remind folks, just, you know, it's one of those things right up there with, you know, not taking your pipe apart while it's hot and, you know, being sure to clean it after every smoke and all that kind of stuff. I mean, just, you know, just bring your pipes inside and try not to leave them in the car and all that kind of stuff.
Quick fire with the squire.
All right, man. Quick fire question.
Ow!
All right, man. Here we go. All right, so this is carrying on from Pastor Joda. You know, he sent us a couple of different series.
I'm excited about these.
Oh, yeah, man. This one is extreme tourism. He does put in the kind of the disclaimer, these will not kill you. You will be properly equipped and taken care of. So, with that in mind, expedition in Antarctica or icebreaker cruise at the North Pole?
Man, it's funny, just taking a quick glance at all these different questions that we're about to answer. I have actually dreamed about all these.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So I kind of actually have strong opinions on every single one of these, which is kind of funny because a lot of the quick fire questions, you know, sometimes we're not as knowledgeable on. But man, okay, I've got to pick expedition to Antarctica. My grandfather, who I loved dearly, he passed away 4 years ago at the age of 96. He'd be 100 this year. But Papa, he had been to every continent on Earth, including Antarctica. And that was one of the things, like, about him that I just admired the most. Like, he was such a fascinating person. And I always, you know, thought to myself, like, you know, when I get old enough to do that, of course, he did that when he was, like, 85, so it's going to be a while for me. But when I get old enough to do that, I'm going to go to Antarctica just like Papa did. And that's on my bucket list. So I got to go with that one.
That's a good one. Okay, yeah, I was going to go with the same, although I don't have anything as compelling as a reason for that for us. That's fantastic. Okay, so next one is explore a Tibetan jungle or the Amazon rainforest.
I'd have to go with Tibetan jungle. Tibet kind of has this allure of it, of you know, forbiddenness and, you know, mysticism and all this kind of stuff. It's in a area of China that's not, you know, particularly accessible and all that kind of thing. So there is something to that I think would be a lot of fun. Of course, the Amazon has some of the mystique as well. I've actually been to South America before. I've been to Peru on a mission trip many, many years ago, but never to Asia. I'd love to go to that part of the world. So I'd have to go with Tibetan jungle.
That's good. Correct me if I'm wrong. When we were kids, they were starting to put computers in schools and they all had the Oregon Trail on them and that sort of thing. You remember
this? Yeah.
Wasn't there also a game that was like an Amazon River type of game? Like Forge the Amazon River? It was like not exactly a sequel to Oregon Trail, but kind of like a follow-up?
I don't know. I guess I don't remember that.
I might be, maybe I made this up, but I have this in my head. I'm going to put it out there. And if anybody knows what I'm talking about, please tell me, because I have no idea what I'm talking about. But I do remember when I was a kid being fascinated with the concept of the Amazon rainforest. And I feel like it was because of this game, or maybe it was like an encyclopedia, like Britannica type of disc that went out. But one way or the other, I'm going to go with the Amazon rainforest. Even as a kid, I really wanted to go. All right, next one is a trip to the International Space Station or exploring the deep sea floor in a submarine. Ooh.
Man, this one is probably the most difficult for me to answer because they're both so intriguing. But I'm going to have to go with the space station. I would love to go to space. It'll never happen probably in my lifetime. But man, for people of our socioeconomic status to be able to to buy a ticket to space, but I'd love to go. I sure would.
I don't know, man. I think as we get into if we live long enough, I think we might be able to see that. Maybe that's just a pipe dream, but I think that could happen. Although I will say between these two, since the guarantee has been there, like between the two, I'd be more willing to go to space just because I'm, mildly claustrophobic and the nature of being like deep undersea for some reason like terrifies me. But since my security and safety has already been guaranteed by the premise of the questions being presented here, I got to go with deep sea floor because there's just so much of the deep sea floor that is unexplored. And, there's just, so much history is down in the depths. And then plus it's also going to be a little bit more colorful than like, oh, look, stars, but closer. So I'm not to downplay the majesty of space or anything.
Stars, but closer.
Anyway, so I'll go with that one. All right. And then finally, hilarious. Breaking the sound barrier in a fighter jet or breaking the sound barrier in a salt flats in a rocket car.
At the salt flats in a rocket car. Yeah. I give me the fighter jet any day. That just seems a little, having that much more room between me and the ground for some reason, seems a little more, comforting, but yeah, that would be really cool, man. Breaking the sound barrier at those kind of high speeds. That'd be pretty neat.
Yeah, no, I'm going to say the same. That's a good one as well. I mean, again, like you say, you've got more space to do it in. I just, if you end up needing to slow down, you got more room to do it. I know that safety isn't a factor here. He was very clear about that, but I can't help but just break that in.
Yep.
Great, great questions, Pastor Joda. And hey, if you've got some quick fire questions, be sure to send them in to us, show@countrysquireradio.com. Again, that is show@countrysquireradio.com.
Your thoughts, your comments, listener feedback.
All right, man, listener feedback. We got a great bit of listener feedback in. Let's go with this one from Eric first. Eric Vanderpool writing in. What did Eric have to say?
Man, love our dear friend Eric. It's always good to hear from him. And he says, after listening to your podcast where you discussed W.O. Larson, I had some thoughts. I believe the expensive Humidor box tobacco was just an advertisement for their other blends. Something so premium, particularly as a gift, do you want to be able to decide when to open the product? You don't really want to be forced to have to open it upon receiving it, lest it be destroyed. It also seems particularly careless to put the tobacco in a humidor, as if it would provide protection. It was, however, I believe, to lend a feeling of premium to the other blends the average pipe smoker might try. I certainly haven't heard of their brand name or their brand before the stunt. Great episode. Keep up the good work, boys. P.S. I got an offset smoker for Father's Day, an inaugural smoke I made. A very small brisket rubbed with salt and pepper over a post-oak fire. We ate this for dinner to smoke. I have the Missouri Meerschaum 150th anniversary tobacco and to drink the 896 golden rum and a highball with a Topo Chico pour over. Man, this so much is going on here that's just awesome. The rum brings out the molasses tones that emerge in the second half of the bowl. The smoke and drink balance the salty and savory brisket. And man, that is from our dear friend Eric, who lives in Texas. And man, just it's always great to hear from you, bro.
Absolutely, Eric. Thanks so much for writing in. And man, what a beautiful barbecue and pipe tobacco.
I know, right? Topo Chico, man.
Also, man, we got one in from Jim Clough. Here's what Jim had to say. Listening to back episodes, heard you talking about pipe villains. Did you ever consider Lee Van Cleef and the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly? And also a few dollars more. Also got in on the ground floor on the new blend By the Fire, trying it in a Savinelli Bing's favorite, also based on John David Cole's recommendation. First impression, I like the blend and was a little worried since I am not a big Perique fan normally, but goes well with a little scotch. I get a kind of creamy mouth feeling. Good job, John David. Also picked up the IPSD 2020 t-shirt. It's very cool. Again, that is from Jim Clough. Jim, Lee Van Cleef is actually, we have not covered him. Although, you know, I guess in the last year or so, I went back and kind of did a rewatch of the Dollar series. Or, you know, I forget what the true fans of that franchise call it. I think it's like the Dollar series of, you know, the old The Man with No Name. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
Westerns. And no, that's a great suggestion. Perhaps this Halloween, man, we haven't done a, you know, to the depths with a focus on a pipe smoking villain in a couple of years, cause we've done kind of a trick or treat approach to it every year, but I'm very willing to go back to that well and do a focus on Lee Van Cleef. If you're game.
Man, I think it'd be great. Of course, he has the iconic meerschaum pipe, you know, that kind of has that darkened rim of the bowl. And we see, you know, occasions nowadays, folks are looking for that that kind of meerschaum pipe where they can have it pre-colored in that same nature with that nice kind of yellow lucite stem. So really cool, man. That would be great. But yeah, dude, regardless, thank you so much. I do want to say for the By the Fire tobacco that we just came out with, that was actually blended by Carson Hornsby, who works at the Country Squire, who, you know, over the past couple of years, I've had the pleasure of kind of teaching and mentoring in the trade. And man, has worked really hard to, you know, get his, you know, kind of tobacco skills up to par. And man, this was the first blend he came out with that I said, you know what, we're going to put this one on the shelf, and really proud of what he did. And so I will definitely pass along those thoughts to him. But man, Jim, thank you so much. And I appreciate you supporting us, man.
Right on. And hey, if you've got some listener feedback, you know, we'd love to get them in, especially iTunes reviews. If you've not headed over to iTunes yet, do so. Write us a review. We love reading those out on the show, and it's a great way to help support the show. Doesn't even cost you a dime to do it. But hey, if you are willing to spend a few dimes to help make sure this show happens every single week, head over to patreon.com/countrysquireradio, where you can learn more about that. You can also keep up with us throughout the week. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at TheRealBoYork.
I'm at John David Cole, or you can get us at the shop at @_countrysquire.
Of course, the show's handles at Squire Radio, but all that information and more can be found at countrysquireradio.com. Man, you know, it was a tobacco talk this week, and you know what that means for next week, right?
Ooh, it means day drinking.
Yes! Squire Select right around the corner. We're doing something a little different. I'll go ahead and tease up. Normally we do, you know, the whiskeys and the various brown water around that. We're going to go in a different direction next week, so stay tuned for more there. But hey, man, this has been a fun episode, and let's go have a week.
See you, brother.